afraid of the dark. Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the history of paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Ashley.
Welcome to episode 22.
Wow.
Yeah. What have we been up to?
Well.
Yes.
I don't want to say it.
It's been a long week. Yeah. Should I say it?
My brother passed away on Wednesday.
Yeah. So we're going to dedicate this episode to Justin.
Yeah.
So.
Love you, brother.
Love you. We're not going to get into the details, but we'll just go ahead and get started, okay?
Okay.
Here are more historic facts about Springfield, Missouri.
Historical facts.
By the turn of the century, Springfield's population had grown to approximately 23,000. We had talked about...
That's pretty much where Republic is right now.
No, we're at 14,000.
No?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, baby.
Yeah.
Honey. When we moved here, the population was 16,000.
No. Okay. So, you are right.
Ha! Always.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, so we did some history on the last episode about Springfield, Missouri. So, yep. We're continuing this. The impact that John T. Woodruff had on the Ozarks landscape is widely recognized and respected.
Literally never heard of the guy.
Yeah, well. He played a crucial role in securing the site for the Springfield Normal School, which is now known as Missouri State University.
Ah.
In Springfield. In addition, he was responsible for developing the Frisco shops in the same city. Woodruff went on to establish his own real estate and development company. I can't talk. I have drank an adult juice box.
Beet box.
It's called Beet Box, which is 11% alcohol, plus several...
Trulies. Yeah, so my brother and his wife are in town from California, and they're in the Air Force, so drinking is just, like, a part of their daily lives. Apparently. Life on base, am I right? So they're introducing us to all of their beverages. We tried soju for the first time on Friday? Saturday? One of the days.
Yeah.
Someday. We tried it a day. It's really good. It's a Korean rice wine, but it's not sake.
Yeah.
But it was very tasty.
Yes.
Some of the flavors were better than others, but none of them were bad. But guess what?
What?
I still don't like alcohol seltzer water. I could drink seltzer water. You add alcohol to it and I'm gagging, and not in a good way.
I like it. I don't know. Anyway.
Anywho.
In addition, he was responsible for developing the Frisco shops in the same city. Woodruff went on to establish his own real estate and development company, and he was the driving force behind the creation of several notable landmarks in the area, including the O'Reilly Hospital, the Ozark Empire Fairgrounds, and the U.S. Federal Medical Center.
Whoa, what's the O'Reilly Hospital?
I think it's now Cox South.
Ah.
I think.
Okay, and I know the medical center, that's the federal prison.
Yes.
Yeah.
Throughout his career, Woodruff was responsible for many significant construction projects. For example, he built the Colonial Hotel in 1907, which was later demolished in 1997.
100 years, or no. not 100 years. No. Nope, never mind. 90 years.
Yeah. He also constructed the Sansone Hotel, now known as the Sterling.
Where's this? I've never heard of that hotel.
Neither have I. I'm not sure.
Is that now maybe the Hotel Vandevort? I know. Every time.
Hershey is chewing on his damn bone again.
Because he knows. He knows.
Anyway, he also constructed the Sansone Hotel, now known as the Sterling, the Woodruff Building, now called Sky 11, and the Kentworth Arms, which is currently MSU's Kentwood Hall.
Huh.
The Woodruff Office Building, which featured a drugstore, barbershop, pool hall, and two elevators, was especially noteworthy due to its impressive height. In fact, the local newspaper even warned residents about the risk of losing their hats if they looked up at the skyscraper.
What?
It says, quote, skyscraper.
Woodruff. What does looking up at the skyscraper have to do with your, because you have to tilt your head back so far?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, that's one thing it has in common with the hotel in Abilene. That one lifts your skirts.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The other one takes your hat. Skirt lifter.
Woodruff also had a hand in the development of the Hickory Hills Golf Course in Springfield.
Yeah.
Throughout.
That was rude. I hate golf.
Yeah. Though Woodruff mainly worked in Springfield, his influence extended beyond the city limits. He played a significant role in the construction of Powersite Dam, which created Lake Tinicomo. Norfolk Dam and Bagnell Dam. When Lake of the Ozarks was formed, Woodruff was actively involved in planning, laying out, and developing the town of Camdenton. The promotion of a designated highway route from Chicago to Los Angeles was a joint effort by Woodruff and Cyrus Avery, who was the chairman of the Oklahoma Highway Commission. Avery, who had worked on highway problems in both Missouri and Oklahoma, envisioned a cross-country road through the heart of business districts in the towns, and it would connect.
In what? You're rushing through reading that.
So,
So Route 66.
Yeah, basically he envisioned a cross-country road through the heart of business districts connecting Chicago to Los Angeles.
Okay.
Yeah.
And connecting town to town.
Town to town, yes.
Okay.
The route was described as connecting Chicago, Bloomington, and Springfield in Illinois, St. Louis, Rolla, Springfield, and Joplin, Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Oklahoma City.
Vinita, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, El Reno, and Sayre in Oklahoma, Amarillo in Texas, Tucumcari, Santa Fe, Los Lunas, and Gallup in New Mexico, Holbrook and Flagstaff in Arizona, and Barstow and Los Angeles in California by September of 1925. It was to be routed through the heart of their business districts and or public squares in each of those cities.
Wow, that's really early.
I know.
For just because cars were still so...
So new, yeah.
New in the 1920s. I mean, they were becoming more popular, but they were still... I don't know.
Yeah. They were pretty new, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
When the route...
First highway.
Yeah. When the route... Or route, whichever one. Doesn't matter. When the route became a reality, the next big hurdle was to give the road its designated number. Two factions were fighting, each... championing its own desired number. Woodruff invited Avery and B.H. Pipemeyer, State Highway Engineer of Missouri. Hershey
Where is he getting them?
I pulled like 5 bones from him, and he keeps finding more.
Where is he? Just let him have it, man. He's determined.
Anyways.
Fucking wizard. Jesus Christ.
Crazy dogs. What was I at?
He's looking at me.
Anyways, Woodruff invited Avery and B.H. Pipemeyer, State Highway Engineer of Missouri, to meet with him at his office on April 30th, 1926, to resolve the conflict. They hashed out a compromise involving an entirely new number and sent a historic telegram to Washington, D.C., declaring the new road Route 66. Woodruff had the vision to see what the new road would mean to Springfield. He built his new Kentworth Arms just east of the square on St. Louis Street, which became the designated route of Route 66 through the square.
Oh.
The hotel was opened in July 1926. Woodruff also told M.E. Galois about the many travelers the street would soon have, and so when Galois constructed his theater on Olive Street, he purchased the storefront on St. Louis Street 2 doors down from the Woodruff Building to be its lobby so that it would front on the new Main Street of America. Probably not by coincidence, the Galois Theater had its grand opening on the very day that Route 66 was officially commissioned, November 11th, 1926.
Wow.
And we will get more into the Galois Theater. Woo-hoo! In this episode. Traces of the Mother Road are still visible in downtown Springfield along Kearny Street, Glenstone Avenue, College, and St. Louis Streets, and on Missouri 266 west of Halltown.
So, okay, this is where I get confused. Did it zigzag? Because Kearny Street ain't close to downtown.
I know.
By a long shot.
I have no idea. It had to have, because Kearny's way north.
Then it's not a highway.
It used to be.
If it zigzags, it's not a highway. No,
it's true. I don't know.
That's why I'm so confused. I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
I know.
Unless it was, if it ran like at an angle.
Possibly. I have no idea.
But then still, yeah, no. I'd have to see like an overhead map of.
Yeah, I don't
know. For that to make sense, because that don't make sense to me. It's like the fucking wire road.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this last episode.
We did with the Trail of Tears.
Yeah. But like there's like 6 different roads called wire road.
I know. It's crazy.
And they're all south of each other.
Yeah. Each year in August, Springfield celebrates the birthplace of Route 66 Festival, which attracts visitors from around the globe.
So Route 66 is what? A Leo.
A Leo. Yes, just like you.
That's all Leos care about.
Yeah.
Being a Leo.
The current population of Springfield is approximately 169,000. The city is situated amidst the beautiful rolling hills of southwest Missouri and boasts numerous attractions for tourists such as museums, nightlife, cultural experiences, and a rich history.
I mean, by whose metrics?
By their own. I'm guessing.
I mean, sure, like there's the art museum and shit, and there is stuff to do. But
actually, compared to a lot of cities, compared to a lot of cities, there is a lot to do in Springfield.
And everyone's always complaining that there's nothing to do in Springfield.
There's a huge nightlife. No,
I know. I'm just saying. I know. Everyone's always complaining. There's nothing to do in Springfield.
That's because people don't look around and try new shit.
Yeah. That.
Yeah.
That part.
We've tried new shit, and there's tons of stuff to do.
Everyone just wants to go hang out at the Bass Pro Shop. And not at the museum, at the Bass Pro Shop.
Yeah. All right. Now let's relax and dive into the history of the Galois Theater in downtown Springfield, Missouri.
Okay.
Located on historic Route 66 in Springfield, Missouri, the Galois Theater is one of the grand old theaters in the Midwest. It first opened its doors in 1926 to much fanfare. The sold out audience was spellbound by the magnificent. I can never talk.
Catastrophic.
We just watched
Pixels
for the 50th time.
Catastrophic.
Anyways, the sold-out audience was spellbound by the magnificent Spanish colonial revival architecture, and even today, visitors are equally awestruck. The lavish detailing of the building starts right at the entrance, and an array of terracotta tiles, brick pilasters, and a terrazzo floor line the front doors.
What is a pilaster?
Pilaster.
Did you misspell something?
Nope. I was reading the article and it said pilasters.
Okay, did they misspell something?
Maybe pillars?
Pilasters. Pillows. Pilasters. Callisters.
So Ashley's trying to define pilasters. P-I-L-A-S-T-E-R-S.
P-I-L what? P-I-L-A?
Uh-huh. S-T-E-R-S. Pilasters.
A rectangular column, especially one projecting from a wall. It's a real thing. Okay. Yeah. Not a typo.
Right. And terrazzo floor line the front doors.
Love terrazzo.
The upper facade features a large stained glass arched window with the letter G in blue glass. The corners of the building are adorned with terracotta tiles, and the roofline is also decorated with them. Visitors should not miss the urns located on each corner.
Of the entrance? Yes,
of the entrance.
Okay. Yeah. Inside or outside?
I don't know. As soon as visitors step through the front doors, yeah, I'm going to guess that on the outside.
Yeah.
As soon as visitors step through the front doors, they are greeted with plaster frieses.
Freezes.
Embellished with griffins, winged cherubs, leaf and dart designs, and flowers. The auditorium is a wonderful mix of molding, medallions, columns, wrought iron, organ pipes, and a proscenium arch with floral fret bands and a recessed oculus in the ceiling. Too many big words. The design here is a combination of Spanish, Italian, and Moroccan architecture.
Pick one!
After 25 years of disuse, the theater was reopened in 2006. The restoration process was faithful to the original design, except for the omission of the heavy flammable drapery that was in vogue a century ago.
They omitted?
Yep, they took that out.
Flammable drapery? Why?
Because it was flammable.
But what's going to catch it on fire?
Fire? I don't know.
Are they lighting shit on fire on stage? I guess,
Well, they couldn't use a non-flammable drapery like,
asbestos?
Asbestos. So they just took it out.
But, so are you saying there's no curtain?
I'm sure there is, but this was
what
just...
What are they doing this in was theater?
Just, it wasn't the actual curtain. This was just drapery that was like for aesthetics. You know how they...
What's gonna catch it on fire in a theater?
I don't know. It's very flammable, so I'm not worried about it. Are you worried about it?
I just want to know what they're so afraid of.
I don't know.
Molotov cocktails?
I don't know. The Galois Theater was built in honor of Maurice Ernest Galois, a prominent builder and developer in southwestern Missouri during the early 1900s.
Are the seat cushions not flammable? I'm so confused. I'm sorry. I'm really stuck on this one. Oh, let's just get rid of all fabric, all wood, all everything, all plaster. If it ain't brick...
Calm down.
Or stone.
Calm down. It's fine. The theater's construction utilized steel and concrete, similar to that of a bridge, with wooden handrails, doors, and door frames.
All flammable.
Restoration efforts in 1990 revealed that the theater was exceptionally well-built, making it more economical to preserve it than to demolish it.
Hey.
As a result, yeah. As a result, the theater's historic appeal was maintained. In 1926, the Glorious Theater was officially opened with the playing of the national anthem by organist Glenn Stanbach, who knows, who also played the, that's what it says. The article says Glenn Stanbach in
parentheses?
I don't know. It says possibly Stanbach.
Parentheses? The little...
Yeah.
Parentheses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who also played the Wurlitzer. The feature movie of the evening was Take It From Me.
It was a movie theater?
Uh-huh.
Not a theater?
Well, it's spelled theater, but it played movies. I think it's both.
Both?
Yeah.
Ah.
That same year, the Woodruff Building in neighboring Springfield, Missouri, was designated the birthplace of Route 66 by the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture as part of the federal interstate highway system. The federal highway ran directly in front of the Glories, which became the city's premier entertainment destination. The Glories Theater was among the first to introduce talking pictures in 1928 and Technicolor in 1936.
Hot damn.
I know. The theater was also renowned for its exceptional service provided by its 10 ushers and doormen.
Did it also have the most fucking expensive popcorn?
Probably not. During the Great Depression and World War II, the Glories hosted community songfests as a means of boosting morale. The Glories also held a Beauty with a Voice competition in which 15 girls would sing on stage and the audience would vote for their favorite. Like an early version of American Idol.
Well, I was thinking beauty pageant. Mm.
In 1952, Ronald and Nancy Reagan attended the premiere at the Glories, and Elvis Presley was even spotted sneaking away between his matinee and evening performances at the Shrine Mosque.
Wow.
Yeah. In the 1970s, moviegoers began to leave downtown and flock to suburban malls, causing the Glories Theater to become neglected and covered by a tarp.
Aww.
Eventually, the theater closed in 1980 after the final performance of La Traviata. By 1986, the abandoned space had become home to Springfield's unhoused population, who would set oil barrel fires to keep warm. Although this caused some damage to the interior, the presence of people protected the historic building from vandalism.
Very good.
Yeah. In the early 1990s, a local group led by Bass Pro Shop founder Johnny Morris... I know. ...discussed restoring the Glories to its original identity as a theater. They purchased the building in 1990 and established the Springfield Landmarks Preservation Trust as a nonprofit organization in 1991. The building was listed in the National Register of Historic Places that same year and then deeded to the trust in 1992. To complete the rehabilitation project, the trust engaged public and private partners with the original $1.8 million budget, ultimately increasing to nearly five times that amount.
Holy shit.
The project focused on replicating the original marquee and renovating the interior. The Galois again opened its doors to the public in 2006 and received excellent reviews. If you're looking for the Galois Theater, you can find it located at 325 Park Central East in downtown Springfield, Missouri, just east of the square.
That's where Ethan graduated from middle college.
That's right, yeah.
Ethan and Robbie.
And it's a very large auditorium, which is very nice.
It's very beautiful inside, nice. And it's right next to Dublin's Pass.
Yes, it is. And we will get to it.
Huh?
We will now get to that part.
So Dublin's Pass?
Well, kind of.
Okay.
You'll listen. You'll hear.
I will hear. Yes, I will.
You will listen to this.
I mean, I can't guarantee I will listen. My brain does what it wants, but...
Yeah, I know. And now for the hauntings. As the night fell upon the old theater, the air grew thick with an eerie silence. The darkness seemed to creep up the walls, seeping into every corner of the building. The employees would often recount strange occurrences, but it wasn't until one fateful night that the truth was revealed. It was a quiet evening, and the bartender was closing up at Dublin's Pass, a restaurant connected to the theater. As she walked towards the bathrooms, she saw a small figure dart into the shadows. Confused, she called out, but there was no answer. Suddenly, she heard a faint whisper in her left ear, and the hairs on her arms stood on end. She turned around, but there was no one there. As she made her way back to the bar, she heard the sound of bottles clinking together. She rushed to the liquor cage, but it was locked, and everything was in its place. She couldn't shake the feeling that something was watching her. Meanwhile, back in the theater, in the old manager's office, a woman in a yellow dress appeared, peering out the window before disappearing into thin air. Her presence was felt throughout the building, and the employees knew that something was not right. Legend has it that the Galois Theater is haunted by the ghost of an old projectionist who died on the job. Martin Kirshner had been working at the theater for decades, and on one fateful New Year's Eve, he was preparing a midnight movie. The audience was gathered waiting for the show to start, but when the time came, the movie didn't begin. The audience stomped their feet to let the staff know that the movie had not begun. So the general manager went up to the projection booth to check on Kirshner and found him dead of a heart attack.
Aww.
Some say that Kirshner's spirit still haunts the theater to this day and that he roams the balcony, touching the hair and behinds of unsuspecting female patrons.
Oh, okay. I don't feel so bad for him anymore.
Yeah.
He's a pervert.
Others have reported hearing footsteps when they're alone in the theater or seeing a man with a hat who disappears when they get too close. Is the Galois Theater truly haunted? Some say yes, and that the ghost of Martin Kirshner still lingers there, waiting to make his presence known to anyone who dares to enter. If you had to be in the Galois Theater alone, would it make you afraid-ish?
Possibly. Who's the lady in the yellow dress?
Nobody knows.
And what's the little tiny shadow?
Nobody knows. Probably a little boy, little child.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. You asked.
I know. I'm just, like, you mentioned them, and then you only named the one.
Yeah, I mean, nobody knows who the woman is. Nobody knows.
Is the woman in the yellow dress a frequent sighting?
I wrote it down, but I deleted it because it wasn't, nobody thinks it's factual.
Ah.
Some say it was, the wife of a former manager who passed away there, but that wasn't proven, so I just took out the stuff that wasn't proven, so.
Okay. Fair enough. But, yeah. I mean, honestly, anyone would debate you that none of this is proven, so.
Well, yeah, true. I mean, who knows? We are here to tell ghost stories.
Yes, we are.
Kind of.
Sort of.
Yeah. Anyways, so.
So what?
Like we said, this is dedicated to your brother Justin.
Yeah.
We miss him a lot.
Yeah, we do.
So this is going to be a long month for us. But it'll get better.
I don't know.
It will. Anyways, anything else?
No.
All right. Let's get out of here. It's bedtime.
Yeah.
If you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about or know anyone who does, please email us at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com, Instagram and Facebook at afraidishpodcast. Of course, the website is still down. All the links will be in the show notes. And I do have this on YouTube as audio, but not video yet. If I do video, it'll probably be at a Patreon, which I do hope to start soon.
Okay.
You can listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and almost anywhere you listen to podcasts.
So, this is something funny. There's a YouTube channel that I watch on YouTube, and she does like a podcast format where she shows pictures. She right. doesn't usually show her face. And she always, whenever she talks about that, you can listen to the audio version wherever fine podcasts are available.
Nice.
Every time I hear that, it makes me chuckle.
But if a fine podcast is available.
Exactly.
Also rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify. 5 stars, please. And until next time, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish of what's in it.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye.